of persons, and we're going to get into the meaning and the definition of that. But basically what we're looking at is we're looking at an error that these early churches had. And remember that these churches right here, these are dispersed Jewish churches, not all of the churches are Jewish because they have many Gentiles in them, but this letter from James was written to the dispersion that had to leave after the persecution in Jerusalem, and so they were scattered abroad in all kinds of new cities and new arenas, and so these churches began to take hold in these new places, and as a result, there were some errors that took place. Anytime you go out into the world, you are going to be in danger of being spotted by the world, of being influenced by the world. And one of the big points of this particular passage right here is that James was very concerned that these churches not be like the world. In fact, that they don't do the same things that the world does. And I think we're going to find that very evident in this particular passage right here. If you wanted to kind of divide up this passage so that you can kind of take it in little chunks, verse 1, we have basically the command that James has given to the churches. And that command is don't have respect of persons concerning the faith. And then in verses 2 and 3, he actually gives a practical example of what he's talking about. And I don't think that this is exclusive, but what he's talking about is he's talking about people coming into your church and you judging them by appearance. In other words, somebody comes in well-dressed with a gold ring and you give him preference, maybe because you think he's rich or because you think he's influential, and you kind of set aside someone who comes in a vile raiment and you don't give him as much preference and direction. So what he's saying is he's saying that, look, this is an example of what I'm talking about. And then in verses 4 through 8, you have the dangers that are associated with this particular action, with this idea of preference or favoritism or respect of persons, that there are some real dangers and some real pitfalls to this particular type of behavior. And then he ends up verses 9 through the rest of the passage that we read, 9 through verse 12, we're dealing with the actual label itself and the fact that, hey, this isn't just a little error in your character, in your judgment. This is actually sin. That respect of persons is a sin against God. So I want to kind of go through this. We'll see how far we can get in this passage today looking through it. We won't try to rush through it, but I think there are some real important points to be made here. So we'll get into it. So we have first the command is that he says, my brethren, and of course this is addressed to Christians. This is a Christian sin. And of course it doesn't mean that Christians are the only ones that commit this sin, but Christians were exhibiting this kind of behavior in some of these new churches that were being started in this other area. And with the example that he gives, what we're dealing with is we're dealing with preference. We're dealing with judging according to the outward appearance. And of course, you know that judging by the outward appearance is always a very dangerous thing to do, because we pride ourselves in being pretty good judges of character. But have you ever been wrong in judging somebody? Have you ever looked at somebody on the outward and just looked at them and immediately in your mind you profiled them and you put them into a particular category, and then you find out, if you have the opportunity to get to know them, if you don't just blow them off, that you were completely wrong about that individual? Yeah, it happens all the time. And it's embarrassing when you get somebody wrong, you know? It's embarrassing when you idolize somebody, because it can go both ways. You idolize somebody, and then you find out that that person that you idolized is a complete jerk, you know? And then you realize, man, I was looking up to this individual. I really thought that he or she was something. And then you find out that they're lower than dirt, you know, so it can kind of go both ways. And James was real, he was real concerned about this. And it doesn't mean that partiality doesn't have its place in other areas of life, or that you don't make judgments based on the outward. It just means that in this particular context, we're going to keep it in this context, that in this context, we're talking about the church. It's a shame if a person comes into an assembly and gets ignored and doesn't feel welcome. That's a shame. It's a shame if they don't feel like really that they're a part. Now, I'll tell you this, that it's not necessarily a shame if somebody comes into the assembly and is welcomed and still doesn't feel like they're a part. Let me tell you, when I first came to church, and I'm talking about this church here, not other churches that we could point fingers at and name, but this church right here, I felt welcome and I felt uncomfortable at the same time. I did. I felt welcome, you know. I felt almost to the point of ambush, you know, with little hand signals and this and that and people coming by and getting close to me. And I'm like, man, this is really weird, you know. But at the same time, I felt uncomfortable because I wasn't a Christian. And I didn't know what all this stuff was, you know. And so if we took our doctrine and our beliefs and our standards and we lowered those in order to try to please guys like me coming in, well, then that's wrong. You know, because the doctrines of God are for us to be submitted to, not for us to manipulate and change and move around. So I'm not saying that we've got to tone things down and lighten up a little bit just so that more people feel comfortable. But by the same token, is we have a real danger of having respect of persons to visitors that come to church. And that's basically what he's talking about. He's talking about the treatment of visitors. And a visitor should always feel like we're glad that they're here. Unfortunately, it's not always the case. This idea of favoritism begins to come in. And we know how damaging favoritism is just in general, you know. Growing up in school, have you ever been in a classroom and the teacher had a pet? You know, the teacher had a favorite student? You know, how did that make you feel, you know? Teacher has his favorite student and maybe you're the one that's favorite, so you said, no, it was fine. I don't have any problem with it. But then you kind of resented that person, you know. You go put an apple on the teacher's desk and get an A on your report card and that kind of thing. Well, it kind of builds resentment. And so you know that that's not right, you know. It shouldn't be right for a teacher to have a favorite. But teachers have favorite students. It's just part of human nature. There are certain people that you gravitate towards, you know. Parents have favorite kids, you know. Hey, I'm telling you, no, I love all my kids equally. Well, no, I don't think that's the case, you know. I think parents probably have certain of theirs, and you're looking at me like with your halo on your head like, oh, no, not me, you know. But come on, man. We play favorites. Bosses have favorite employees, you know, where they're kind of coddled and protected and given favorable treatment, not based on their performance, but just based on the fact that somebody likes them. So we understand what favoritism is, and it can breed a lot of problems. It can, and favoritism basically in this particular context here is based on your judgment of the outward person. Somebody comes in and you perceive them as influential, as rich, which is in this particular passage right here, and you say, well, what's the definition of rich? Anybody has more money than me? Basically, the way I look at it, you got more than me, then you're rich. You know, no, really. But he's talking about people that are, you're not just talking about upper middle class, you're talking about people that actually have some money, have some influence, and have power. And so basically what's happening here is that this church is mirroring, they are duplicating attitudes that are in the world already. And believe me, this is part of human nature, like it or not. There have been many psychological studies that prove beyond a shadow of a doubt that if you're pretty or if you're handsome, you have advantage in this world. It just happens. I was watching a YouTube video in preparation for this, kind of looking at some of these studies, and they actually had a hidden camera. And they had this hidden camera on this street corner, and they had a guy dressed up, and he had, you know, kind of shabby, kind of homeless clothes, and he kind of walked like this. And then in the middle of the sidewalk, he started coughing. And then he started choking. And he got down on his knees. And then he pretended to pass out right there on the sidewalk. And because he was dressed shabbily, people were just walking around him. And one lady, with her purse and umbrella and everything, she actually stepped over him and kept on walking. That same guy got up after a few minutes, headed over, you know, got in the van, changed up, you know, combed his hair, put a suit and a tie on, and carried a briefcase, and walked out onto the same street corner 10 minutes later, and he started coughing, dropped to his knees, and then he pretended to pass out. I mean, immediately, people were there. They were trying to give him CPR. They were trying to revive him. They were calling the ambulance. They were doing all kinds of stuff. And you look at that, and you go, now, come on, man, what is the difference? We ought to treat all human beings the same. But you know what human nature is? Human nature gives preference based on appearance. You get somebody who's shabby or looks like they've been on the streets or something, you automatically value them less than you value somebody that looks like they may be successful or have money or have influence and have power. And that's what he's talking about here. He's talking about this idea of giving preference based on attractiveness, based on affluence. And listen, this is in our nature. They have done studies. Some of you teachers will probably know about some of these studies where they take first grade and kindergarten kids and they show them pictures of adults and they say, who's the nice teacher and who's the mean teacher? And they show pictures of attractive teachers I'm not going to say unattractive, but just average. And believe me, most of us, we're just average, right? We're not going to appear in Vogue magazine or Men's magazine or Health or anything like that. We're just normal people. But they showed them that. And the attractive pictures, always the little kids value them as a better teacher, a nicer teacher, or whatever it is. And so that study proves that this is just in us. It's in our nature. It's in our DNA to make these kind of judgments. So you're thinking, well, you know, it's just a part of who we are. You know, it's a part of society. You're good looking, you get the job. You know, you've got, present a good outward appearance, you're going to have advantage. Somebody's going to call EMS if you collapse on the street. And if you're not so good looking, or you don't have money, or you don't have affluence, or you don't have power, then you're not going to get that much in life. And you're thinking, well, that's just the way things are. Here's the point. That may be the way things are in our world, but that should not be the way things are in the assembly, in this church. And you think, well, you know, man, what can we do about it? What's the option, you know? Because if it's in us and we just automatically judge and we give preference and we do this, well, here's the point, is that just because that's what the world does, it doesn't mean that that's what we do. Isn't it true that when we get saved, God wants to change us. And I'm not just talking about changing your haircut or your dress or what you wear. I'm talking about changing the heart. I'm telling you, if you belong to Jesus Christ, you gotta start looking at people differently. Especially when it comes to the assembly, especially when it comes to gatherings of believers. We have always tried to stress here that anybody is welcome here. You don't have to cut your hair first. You don't have to get appropriate clothing. Of course, it'd be nice if you did, but you don't. That's not a requirement. Hey, if somebody comes in and they walk through this door, I remember a couple came in one time and they were dressed completely inappropriately for church. And I'm like, oh boy, you know, completely inappropriate. But you know what I was blessed by? Is seeing brothers and sisters go up to that couple, help them find a seat, give them some songbooks, take their name down, ask them if maybe they could visit them later. You know, that's what the church is all about. Now, for somebody who's saved and who belongs to the Lord, hey, you got different standards, you know. You've got a responsibility to do some things. But somebody just coming in off the street, and hey, if we're the kind of church that takes somebody that looks automatically successful, looks like, man, this person is going to be good for the church, and then we give them preferential treatment, and somebody that's not so elevated in society, and we kind of, you know, just put them off over there, shame on us. Shame on us. We shouldn't be that way. We should, he says, don't have the faith of the Lord of glory with respect to persons. So I think it's a real good thing to take a look at, and it's a real good thing for us to judge. Because believe me, as much as we attempt and try to do it, we still become guilty of it sometimes. And that's sad. And here's the example, you know, that he gives. The man coming in with a gold ring, goodly apparel, and we've got respect unto him, and then say to the poor man, sit thou there, or sit under my footstool. That can apply to someone who presents themselves as rich and successful, and it can apply to someone who is not so much, but I think that it could carry over into a lot of different areas and categories of our life where we judge. All right. There are so many divisions in life that are non-existent in the church. In society, there is a definite division between rich and poor. Rich people have an advantage. You say, well, no, not really. No, I'm telling you, money can buy, they say money can't buy love. Well, maybe not, but money can buy just about everything else. Seriously, if you've got money, then you get a traffic ticket and they charge you $200 for a traffic ticket, no problem. You pay it and you move your way and it hardly is a speed bump in the middle of the day. You get somebody that lives hand to mouth day to day and they get a traffic ticket and all of a sudden they've got to try to come up with $200 and they can't, and then the court assigns them fees and they take off work and lose their job to go try to pay the ticket and all that. I'm telling you. There is a big difference in society between the rich and the poor. And there's no way that we can equalize that division. Communism isn't going to equalize it for us. It's just the way things are, you know? But in the church, in the assembly, your influence, your power, your money is absolutely no good. Everybody is on the same level. And that is life-changing when a person realizes that, how do they say it? They say that the ground is level at the foot of the cross. Rich, poor, bond, free, Jew, Gentile are all one in Christ. And that's the beauty of the church. And by the way, that's how God looks on things. What we're doing is we're trying to train our mind to look at the things the way that God looks at them. Remember when they were looking for a king to replace Saul, and they were going to anoint one of Jesse's kids, and Jesse had some sons. I mean, I'm talking about these guys were veteran warriors. They were tall. They were strong. They had good physical features. And when the prophet saw them, he said, surely this has got to be the king. And he kept being reminded by God, no, you're looking at the outside. God looks at the heart. And finally, scrawny David comes along, and God says, that's the one right here. Because God doesn't judge like you judge. Believe me, wealth is impressive to us. I'm not going to try to discount it. If I walk out of that building and I walk into town and I run into President Trump, hey, I'm going to be impressed. Dude, President Trump, man, I just saw him, you know? He was standing right there. I got a tweet one time from a coworker, and a coworker said, the most incredible thing just happened to me. And she said, I high-fived Brad Paisley. And I thought, really, who's he, you know? I had no clue. I stopped listening to country music when Mel Tillis died, you know? All that new stuff, I don't know. But she said, I high-fived Brad Paisley. I'm telling you, you're impressed. I'll tell you something else. God is not impressed with Brad Paisley. God's not like, man, and the angels, they're not impressed. They've seen the glory of God. Do you think the angels are going to be impressed because they run into somebody in this life that's influential? Oh, no, I'm telling you. We got to get our eyes on the right kinds of things. You got to realize and understand, God sees men way different than you see them. So the command is you've got to stop judging by the outward. Stop being impressed by things, because it's a hollow shell. You think rich people got it made in this life and everything? I'm telling you, rich people are just, they have the same problems you do. This whole adage of grass is greener on the other side, and you're looking at somebody else and you thinking their life is all that, maybe their life isn't all that. Maybe they've got as many problems as you do. And in the end, we all lay in the ground, and there are no U-Hauls following anybody's funeral procession. You can't take everything stops when you die, and that's the direction that we're all headed with, you know? So in the church, we've got to start seeing people for who they really are. That's recipients of God's mercy and God's love. Stop being impressed with those that are influential, and stop being disgusted with those that don't fit your idea of what a good human being ought to be. Because God died for disgusting people. Hey, He died for you. Man, I'm telling you, some of you before you got saved, hey, some of you, now that you are saved, still need a lot of work. Yeah, you're not so, and I'm telling you, we're all human beings. So look at what he says here afterwards. He says there in verse 4, after he gives the illustration, kind of what he's talking about there, and I don't think we've got to describe that any further. We know exactly what he's talking about here. He says, are you not then, in verse 4, partial in yourselves and are become judges of evil thoughts? So we're getting into a section here that's going to deal with some dangers of favoritism, some dangers of having respect to persons. And this is the first danger right here, is that you become a judge of evil thoughts. It actually changes you. We're not talking about just making errors in judgment. We're talking about evil thoughts. People don't like that word evil. It is a strong word, and it's a very descriptive word, and it actually changes. Look, don't make the mistake of judging by appearance, because you're going to end up judging by evil thoughts. It's just part of that deal. The lowest of society deserves the same dignity and respect that the highest in society deserve in the assembly. That means somebody comes in vile raiment and somebody comes in well-dressed clothes, they both deserve to sit in the best seats and not to have partiality. I remember this was years ago. I don't remember. It might have even been back in the late 80s. When I started, it was actually about the mid-80s. Danny Delros got me started going to the rescue mission. And I didn't know what the rescue mission was. You know, I hadn't had a lot of exposure to street people before that time. And we go down there, and it turns out there's all these guys from the street, you know. And believe me, some of them are real characters, you know. They're very colorful individuals, you know. And they have some amazing stories. You sit down with some of these street people, and you listen to their stories. I had one where on spring break, this guy went to Mars and came back, you know. I'm like, wow. Some of them are out of their heads. Some of them are, their brains are destroyed by drug abuse and by sniffing glue. Others have mental issues. Others are just plain lazy and won't work and end up on the streets. You get a mixture of a whole bunch of different people. But I remember one time that I don't remember whether I asked permission or not, but I invited, remember Frank Cummings? The guy who used to, I told Frank, I said, hey, I said, where do these guys go on Sundays? And he said, well, we take them to different churches that invite us whenever we can get a church to invite us. And I said, yeah, great. I said, why don't you come to our church on Sunday? And he said, great. I said, in fact, we're having dinner on the grounds. And he's like, great. So we brought the rescue mission, 22 guys all on the streets, and they filled up our congregation right there, and we got ready to serve food, and this guy, he had that appearance that made you just kind of, you know, go that way. And he reached right over one of those ladies and said, all right, fried chicken, and just grabbed some, put it on a plate. I saw her melt, and I was just standing back watching, and I just enjoying the whole thing, you know. You know, sometimes we get to where we get ourselves insulated. And people have this idea that people that come to church are perfect and don't have any problems and there's no issues and everything. And sometimes you get yourself insulated and you get yourself into church. And so then what you want to do is you kind of want to preserve that decorum, right? You get around people that are safe, that you know that they're believers too, and that you can get that divine support and all of that. And sinners, when they come in, they just seem to mess it up. I'm serious. They don't know how to act in church. There's no instruction book that says, before you go to the assembly, make sure you do this, this, and this. Man, somebody invites them, and they just come. And you know what the church has to do? The church has to put up with that discomfort. We've got to put up with it. We've got to realize that, man, they are no different from us. Anytime you get to the place where you think that you're better than somebody else, you are on dangerous ground. You are thinking too highly of yourself. Believe me, you are a lot less than what you think you are. We are so proud. We are so arrogant. We are. It's an amazing thing. Look what it. That's one of the dangers in this passage. One of the dangers of favoritism of respect of persons is how it actually changes us and makes us judges of evil thoughts. And God may not be judging that person the same way as you, so you gotta get in line. But then he makes a point there in verse 5. He makes a point, and this goes and shows us the example of our Lord. He says, "Hearken, my beloved brethren," and it uses God as an example. He says, "Hath not God chosen the poor of this world, rich in faith, and heirs of the kingdom which he had promised to them that love him?" He's giving the example of God himself. He said, now wait a minute, you guys are despising the poor. And that's what he says there. Look, he said there in the beginning of verse 6, he says, "But you have despised the poor." Look at the beginning of verse 5. It says, God has chosen, but hath not God chosen the poor? See the disconnect here? God has chosen the poor, the ones that you despise. There's a problem with that. There's a problem because you're despising what God has valued. God says, I love that soul. And you're turning around and saying, I despise that soul. Sometimes our preaching can get a little too self-righteous, a little too high-minded, where we look down on others. And they're the ones that God died for. And he says, had not God chosen the poor? One of the things that we know about God's character is God is impartial. Now, since this is a Bible study, let's look at just a couple of verses real quick. We could look at more, but here's a couple of examples in the New Testament of God's impartiality. Look in Acts chapter 10 in verse 34. This is after Peter has gone over to Cornelius and begin to tell them some things. In verse 34, it says, "Then Peter opened his mouth and said, Of a truth, I perceive that God is no respecter of persons. But in every nation, he that feareth him and worketh righteousness is accepted with him." And so that tells you that that's what God's nature is when it comes to salvation. It blows our mind because we definitely would not be that way. But God says, in every nation, every race, every people, every situation, those how does he phrase it here? He says, he that feareth him and worketh righteousness is accepted of him. So God is impartial. He doesn't care how much money you have. He doesn't care what you look like. It's not an issue with him what you've done in this life. But if you humble yourself and fear God, God responds to that. He is no respecter of persons. And by the way, he is not going to change based on your affluence. Oh yeah, there are judges out there that will bend the rules for you based on your level in society, but God's not impressed with anything. He has his principles, and his principles do not change based on the person. They're the same for everybody. And that's what salvation is. Salvation's the same for everybody. That means it doesn't matter what you are, rich, poor, bond, free, influential, the lowest in society. It doesn't matter if you're a president or if you're a slave. You come to God the same way. There's no exceptions for the powerful in society. Everybody comes to God the same way. That's how God views it. Look in Romans in chapter 2 and verse 4. He says, "Or despisest thou," I was going to read the whole passage, but for the sake of time, look at verse 11. No, that's going to be hard. We're going to pick out verse 6 and verse 11. Basically, this is a passage that is describing how God judges. And in verse 6, he says, "Who will render to every man according to his deeds." And then it says in verse 11, "For there is no respect of persons with God." So God's judgment is based on certain principles and characteristics of himself, and that's how he judges. He doesn't He is not influenced or moved by anything else in your life but the principles that he desires right here, and or that he states and he lays out. So he says he's going to render to every man according to his deeds. So according to what you do, that's what he's going to render unto you, for there is no respect to persons with God. In other words, God is not making any exceptions based on a person's power, appearance, influence. And God is not impressed. He is not moved by pretty people. Yeah, we are. We may step over the homeless person and then come to the rescue of someone in a suit and a tie. But God, he's not impressed and he's not moved by all those things. Look at Colossians in chapter 3 in verse 23. He says, "And whatsoever you do, do it heartily as to the Lord and not unto men, knowing that of the Lord you shall receive the reward of the inheritance, for ye serve the Lord Christ. But he that doeth wrong shall receive for the wrong that he had done, and there is no respect of persons." Do you see this phrase continually coming up in reference to God's character? God does not have respect of persons, and we could go through more, but God doesn't bend his principles. He doesn't have a double standard. He's the same. You want to call upon his name, whether rich or poor, bond or free, you call upon his name the same way. He's going to judge your works. He's going to judge your works the same way he judges somebody else's work. He doesn't play favorites. Everybody is same and on the level ground. And so this is the character of God. God doesn't bend for anybody. We bend to him. Now, back there in James in chapter 2, he says, "Hearken, my beloved brethren," he says there in verse 5, "hath not God chosen the poor of this world rich in faith and heirs of the kingdom which he had promised to them that love him?" Consider that phrase for a minute. He's chosen the poor of this world rich in faith. Insane riches are out of the reach for most of us. This whole idea that anybody in this world can be rich, anybody can be president, no. Most things in life are out of our reach. We're just average people that, you know, we don't have much in this life. And yet, when we got saved, we became insanely wealthy. Have you realized that? You're all bummed out because you can't get up enough money to put new brake shoes on your car. I understand that. That is a frustration. But hold on, man, because you are an heir. Do you realize that you are an heir of salvation? And you didn't work for it. You got it freely. You know how cool it is to be an heir? It's one thing to be a capitalist and having built a company from the ground up. That's one thing, you know. You got some respect for that. But an heir who inherits all this wealth and didn't work for it, that's an amazing thing. I got to looking at some heirs, famous heirs in society, and I'm thinking some of these people that are heirs are positioned to take possession of incredible wealth beyond our imagination. And I think specifically, I was thinking of one, and this young girl, she's about the same age as Matthew, and she is getting ready to, or at some point in her life, if she lives long enough to see her father dies, she's going to inherit the Dell Corporation. You know, Michael Dell, he's the 37th richest person in the world. He actually tweeted my son Matthew. I got to drop his name. When Matthew took some pictures of the F1 formula for Dell, and he said, "Good job, Matthew." Matthew was like, "Did you see that? Michael Dell just tweeted me in this." And this girl, she's going to inherit all of that, you know? Do you realize that what Michael Dell has is puny in comparison to what we have in Christ? And I'll tell you why. Because the forgiveness of sins and the righteousness that's found in Jesus Christ and the inheritance of eternity is something that the richest man in the world couldn't possibly buy. See, it's all about a mindset. How do you see humanity? Are you impressed with the rich and with the powerful? Listen, we are all human beings that need the same salvation. We need the same Lord. We need the same forgiveness of sins. Has not God chosen the poor of this world, rich in faith? Do you see that God sees things different than we see them? The lesson is we've got to get in line with God. Got to think like He thinks. Got to stop looking down on people. You got to stop despising people that you don't think are worthy of His time. You got to treat all men equal. And it doesn't say, it's not talking here about rich men being barred from the assembly. It's not talking about the fact that, hey, these evil rich men, that they don't belong in our church. No, a rich man belongs in our church. Rich men need to be saved. They need to be part of an assembly. They need to learn the same lessons, but so do poor people. There's just that there's no difference between the two. That's the lesson that he's talking about here. And he goes on and he says, there in verse 6, he says, do not rich men oppress you and draw you before the judgment seats? Do not they blaspheme that worthy name by which you are called? And so I don't know who these men were that were coming into the assembly. Because there's some rich men that are very generous and do a lot to try to alleviate the suffering of people that don't have much. But then there are other rich people that got rich because they oppressed poor people. You've heard of the term slumlord before, right? People that acquire a mass amounts of real estate and then victimize people that don't have hardly anything, you know, just to amass their own wealth. And even Proverbs says, you don't get wealthy by oppressing the poor. And so that there are men like that. But here's the thing, if somebody comes in and they're like that, they may have even drawn people to the judgment seat in order and got their expensive lawyers and brought somebody to court. And here we are in the church and we're looking up to them. Do you realize that nobody's worth that kind of respect and that kind of glory? Nobody's worthy of that. And for us to elevate somebody just because they have money and to discount certain things, but it's true in society, right? I'm telling you, what's the old adage? It's better to have a good lawyer than to be innocent. That's absolutely true. But he says the character of men isn't worthy of that kind of preference. The character of men isn't worthy of that kind of regard, that kind. And so he's making these arguments here. He's making the arguments that, number one, you guys acting like that is going to make you judges of evil thoughts. It's going to change your heart. It's going to cause you to descend. It's causing you to act in such a way that is against God's character when you should be trying to align yourself with God's character. It's causing you to give glory to men that are not deserving of that glory. And so those are all really good arguments. But there's an argument that's even better than that. And this is the brutal one. Look at verse 8. If you fulfill the royal law according to the scripture, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself, you do well. Here's an argument that supersedes all other arguments. And if there's any reason why you should cease to show favoritism and have respect to persons in the assembly and give preference to certain individuals over other individuals, it's the fact that God calls us to love our neighbor as ourselves. I'm telling you, that is an underrated doctrine of God. You're supposed to love God with all your heart, mind, soul, and breath, and you're supposed to love your neighbor as yourself. Well, we're going to get into that a little bit and find out exactly what God is talking about when he's talking about love your neighbor as yourself. Because it's one thing for somebody to tell me to love my neighbor. And believe me, as long as you got good neighbors, that's not real hard to do. But when you get a neighbor that just makes your life miserable, oh man, then all of life changes and you start obsessing and thinking about your neighbor, and the Hatfields and McCoys thing starts up and you're going back and forth, and then you got to realize, no, God called you to love your neighbor. Well, what is this all about? So if you fulfill the royal law, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself, you do well. So what is he talking about here? And how could that command, if you put it in practice, absolutely transform your life? We'll pick it up next week. Amen.